From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll take a walk on the supernatural side. Here's what's happening. Well, North Korea has dramatically escalated its warlike rhetoric, warning now that it has authorized plans for nuclear strikes on targets in the United States. This is what they say. The moment of explosion is approaching fast. The North Korean military goes on, warning that war could break out today or tomorrow. The latest pronouncement came as Washington pushed to reinforce its Pacific missile defenses, preparing to send ground-based interceptors to Guam and dispatching two Aegis-class destroyers to the region. Okay, as you know, I've been in the Navy 9 years. I also went through, when I was a little boy, the Cuban Missile Crisis. And in school, we used to have these bomb alerts where we'd go into fallout shelters. As a matter of fact, during those early days, many of you weren't even born, people were building fallout shelters in their basements in case of there was some atomic war with the Soviet Union at the time. In my lifetime, I have never witnessed such crazed rhetoric from another country. There's something wrong with this guy, Kim Jong-un. There's something wrong. Anyways, I think the war drums are beating, folks. I hate to say it, but it's something that I feel. You know, we've been talking for 2 years about feeling something impending. I don't know if this is it or not, but this is very, very bizarre. Anyways, we're going to do all we can as a nation to do what we must. Stand by and watch. As a matter of fact, U.S. officials, as I mentioned yesterday, are expressing concern that North Korea could even launch some kind of nuke device over the United States, which would create an electromagnetic pulse, which will knock out the grid system. In a moment, Michael Maloof joins us. He was on with me just not too long ago. We're going to talk about his theory of this possibility. Carnival Cruise Lines must have a curse on them. One person missing after high winds in Mobile, Alabama, caused the disabled cruise ship Carnival Triumph to break loose from its dock. An official with the city's fire department said the missing man and another person were in a guard shack that was blown into the river. One man recovered. The Triumph has been at a shipyard in the port of Mobile since an engine fire left the cruise ship crippled and adrift in the Gulf of Mexico with more than 4,200 angry people aboard. 4 days, tugboats guided the disabled ship into the port as passengers complained about miserable conditions. A new Gallup poll finds that 48% of Americans think the economy growth could be given priority even if the environment suffers. Somewhere in contrast, 43% say the government environment should get top priority, even at the risk of curbing economic growth. Kia and Hyundai, Korean sister auto companies, are recalling over 1.6 million vehicles. The cars, it seems, share a defect in their brake lamps. The brake lamp problem is compounded because it sends incorrect signals to the car's electronic brain. Well, ever been on a plane and you're sitting next to a screaming kid and it's a long flight? It's not pleasant. Parents taking infants on long flights are turning now to medication to help their children sleep. But is the practice safe or a dangerous abuse of parental power? On a recent afternoon flight, for example, from Miami to Los Angeles, travelers were impressed with the three young children who slept most of the way and then played quietly. How sweet and well-behaved they were, the passengers thought. But one woman said, I'm not buying it. These kids have been drugged. Dr. Peter Bragan with us. Peter, let me ask you this. Are they drugging these kids on planes?
Oh, yeah. You know, parents have drugged their children forever with various agents going way, way back in time to using paregoric and stuff. But, George, when you asked me to do this show, you didn't know it was my specialty. Crying babies is my specialty.
I did not know that.
I'm a baby whisperer. If you go to my Facebook page, it's my public Facebook page for the signature picture. It's me holding the baby. that I've gone out into the audience at a stuffed conference I'm talking to, and I picked up the baby, and I brought the baby back, and I'm holding the baby who's not crying anymore so mom could stay and hear me talk. And I do it on airplanes, George. If I hear a crying baby and I'm feeling brave enough and awake enough, I'll go over and I'll just stand there.
Now, do you introduce yourself?
No, I just sort of stand there and I smile and I look really interested. And pretty soon the mother's feeling a little better. There's somebody there standing there looking interested. The baby wonders, who's looking interested at me? Then the baby looks at me. Then I smile. And, George, if that doesn't work, I look out of the corner of my eye and I go, and that always works.
Well, let me tell you, though, Peter, you know, I was on a flight from Los Angeles to Denver. And there was a kid on the plane who did not stop screaming. And, you know, there were some people who were so angry, they wanted the kid parachuted out of the plane. I mean, it got to be that bad. How dangerous is it to drug a kid on a plane? I would never do it.
Well, it's very dangerous, especially to do it as you're getting on the plane because you don't know how the baby's going to react. But it's just the wrong approach. The mother is desperate. It's a mother alone. And everyone knows that babies respond to a new person.
Oh, that's true. Well, we lost you there, Peter. We'll check in with you. Clip right off. A further 4 cases of bird flu virus not previously seen in humans have been reported by authorities in China. 3 women, aged 32, 45, 48, and an 83-year-old man were diagnosed between March 19th and the 21st. They are critically ill. There have now been 7 confirmed cases of the H7N9 virus. 2 people have died. The family of a 24-year-old California man who died unexpectedly after having his wisdom teeth removed is questioning the medical care he received during the routine oral procedure. After the surgery last month, Marek Lipinski, he's a software developer from San Diego, experienced some complications. He woke up coughing during the procedure. He's giving a powerful anesthetic, but his condition deteriorated. He went to a hospital. He died 3 days later. Dr. Bruce Goldberg, who's a hypnotherapist but also a dentist. Bruce, how serious is this? Going to get your wisdom teeth out and you die?
This is very serious. First of all, in addition to my hypnotherapy practice and taking people into past lives and introducing them to time travelers, I'm also a dentist, and I've been a dental malpractice consultant for several decades, so this is something that's right up my alley. The drug that was used, one of the drugs, there was supposed to be 6 drugs he was given, which is ridiculous, but this propofol, it's an IV-injected general anesthetic. This is the drug that killed Michael Jackson.
That's right.
Okay, remember June 25th, 2009,
yep.
Okay? And this is a drug that it's got a very narrow safety margin, so it's a terrible drug to use for any reason, least of all for surgery. There are many other drugs you could have used. General anesthetic by the oral surgeon, this Dr. Stephen Paul of Temecula, he obviously wasn't trained very well or wasn't thinking clearly, because you don't do this. Secondly, they found a piece of a gauze pad was found in his trachea, which means that he was coughing because of the gauze pad. You take the gauze pad out, you don't give him a general anesthetic.
Gosh.
That's very dangerous to begin with, because the guy's coughing because there's a gauze pad. You look for any obstruction first. So
yeah.
This case is just, I'll tell you, Natalie, the sister, said that there's a quote here that the family plans to take legal action. Well, let me tell you something. The attorneys are going to be lining up like they're going to be on her like a cheap suit.
Well, let me tell you, Bruce, my 18-year-old granddaughter several months ago went and got 4 wisdom teeth taken out. And I got to tell you, I was in St. Louis at the time, thank God. I was on pins and needles because, you know, I have seen stories like this. And I'm saying, gosh, you know, this is the worst nightmare to a family. What do you recommend?
Well, first of all,
parents, what do they do?
People who have their wisdom tooth out. Look, I was a dentist for 13 years. I took wisdom teeth out. You can do it under local anesthesia. You don't need to go. Anytime you go under general anesthesia, you are risking your life, no matter how simple the operation is. The problem was there was no anesthesiologist there. This Dr. Stephen Paul is an oral surgeon. Fine, it's an extra training. But he obviously didn't do his job well that an anesthesiologist monitoring it would have been able to correct this. And the drugs that were prescribed, that would never have been done in a typical hospital situation. They wouldn't prescribe the propofol. It's just not indicated. So the other thing is that too high a dose of the propofol, one of the side effects is it leads to cardiac arrest. That's exactly what Lipinski died of. So, I mean, the standard of care is the issue we use in malpractice or negligence, as it's called technically. And the standard of care here was obviously violated. And I'll tell you one thing. This is just, you know, it doesn't matter. Okay, they're going to win the case when they do a civil case, but the family lost a son and a brother for Natalie. This is something that should never have happened, and this is an insult to the field, and it makes people hate dentists even more.
What a nightmare. Bruce, thank you so much. I appreciate that, stepping outside of your hypnotherapy practice to comment on this, but you are a dentist and a darn good one as well. In a moment, Michael Maloof joins us. My, oh, my, what is North Korea up to? We're going to get Michael's take. He has written a book called The Nation Forsaken, EMP, The Escalating Threat of an American Catastrophe. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Michael Maloof has spent 30 years of federal service in the U.S. Defense Department. While with the Department of Defense, Maloof was the Director of Technology Security Operations, head of a 10-person team involved in halting the diversion of militarily critical technologies to countries of national security risks. And here he is back on Coast to Coast, author of A Nation Forsaken. Michael, I can't think of a better time to have you on. All this rhetoric in North Korea, truly unbelievable. I mean, what are you hearing within your own sources?
Well, I'm hearing that things are very, very tense. They are perhaps going to get even worse. And the question is, who's going to blink first? And given the tensions that are going on right now, at least the tensions are being felt in Washington, but probably not as much in South Korea for some reason, because they've lived under the specter forever. However, there is a concern that of a miscalculation, and I think that is what's even more of concern with the over here and just by some happenstance that some innocuous event could create the very thing that we're trying to avoid. It looks as though the leadership under Kim Jong-un is really flaying around trying to gain support of the military.
Yeah.
And that seems to be something that he's been trying to get for some time, and he's really pushed now things to the brink, and probably more further than his father even did.
I think so. Could there be a coup, though? Could some smart guy in the military say, this is insane, we're not going to go to war with the United States, and take him out?
Well, it appears as though he's listening to a more aggressive group within the military. There seems to be a split in the military. Sure, anything can happen. And folks would say that the more he pushes, it means the greater need he has for acceptance and for backing of the military, and which basically means he just doesn't have all that much. So he's really trying to prove himself. He's only 28 years old. What does he know?
Yeah.
And exactly. even his father was not all that popular with the military. The only one who was Kim Il-sung, who founded North Korea.
His grandfather.
His grandfather.
Okay. Well, and let me ask you this. Has this all started since the United Nations poured sanctions on North Korea because of their involvement with building nuclear weapons?
Yes, yeah, exactly. That and the missile test. They because they belonged to the UN, and they were sanctioned against doing that, and they went ahead and did it anyway. Both a missile test and a nuclear test. And once the sanctions were agreed to, and by the way, China agreed to that, which is quite unusual. China went along with the sanctions.
That's right. No, they did. But they're not doing much right now to stop the rhetoric, are they?
Well, therein lies another problem. China's really caught between the rock and hard place. Number one, the Chinese have a security arrangement with the North Koreans that if they're attacked, they have to come to their
as we do with South Korea.
Exactly. But on the other hand, they don't want a war. And And what's also becoming increasingly apparent is that Kim Jong-un isn't even listening to Beijing. He's going his own direction.
He's just doing his thing.
Yeah. And that's very disturbing. So, but the Chinese did call a meeting, and in Beijing, they asked representatives from North Korea, South Korea, and the United States to sit down and try to talk things out. I haven't heard what the results of that are, but they do not want a war.
Nobody does. But here's the problem as I see it, Michael. And then we're going to get into your incredible work on EMPs, mm-hmm. which is a huge problem for mm-hmm. us. The way I'm looking at this is, even at this point, let's say we all break bread with North Korea and everybody calms down. What's going to stop them from continuing to build missiles capable? And they may be able to hit Hawaii now and Guam and Okinawa, but I don't think they could hit Los Angeles today. But you know what? In a year or two, they'll have the technology to do that. Why would we be so stupid to sit back and break bread with them, knowing what their intentions are eventually?
Well, the hope is that they will calm down and that they'll come to reason. But it looks like they have their own program, their own direction, and previously under the father, they actually suspended the nuclear development program, destroyed part of the Yongbyon facility. Now all of that's supposed to be kicking in, but that's going to take a while. This is all preparation for the young guy to show that he's stronger than the father, and this is one of the things that he's tried to demonstrate, is that he is stronger than his father, and he's going to be listening to, using more of the military saber rattling than his father did.
Isn't he concerned about what would be a massive retaliation on our behalf if he did anything? If he launched on Hawaii or our bases or South Korea, or even tried to hit our mainland, our submarines, our missiles would devastate him. Is he insane?
Well, other analysts believe that he's not suicidal, but I think they also say that he's probably pushing as far as he can to get concessions out of the United States and he might even be doing the same thing with the Chinese. He's really isolated himself, he really doesn't have any friend. But yeah, he definitely would be bringing on it would be suicide to do anything like that. Now, some analysts believe that given the fact that he's gone so far with such bellicose rhetoric, that he might have to. He's going to have to do something. And consequently, he may just shoot some artillery or what have you at an island off the South Korean coast,
right.
And declare victory and placate the military. But the kid doesn't seem to be that to possess that kind of intuitive thinking or in-depth thinking, and he's being guided by people around him. He's by people who are much more strident in their thinking, and unfortunately he's demonstrated since he's actually come to power that he has been listening to more of a radical element within the military. He's sunk in a South Korean ship. He's engaged in cyber attacks on South Korea.
He's got a million plus army that would be South Korea would be no match for his army if they just all flooded across the demilitarized zone.
That's correct. And Seoul is only about 30 miles from the DMZ, so he could those troops could reach there in no time flat. And as well as the artillery.
Could stop him is nuke him. That's the only way you'd stop him.
Yeah, well, that's what MacArthur wanted to do. But that didn't happen.
Well, we're going to come back in a moment, Michael. I want to talk about the EMPs, electromagnetic pulses. Tell us exactly how it happens, what the possibility is, and then we'll speculate again on why a country like North Korea would even consider wanting to do something like that. Our guest this hour, Michael Maloof, look, this hour is not intended to scare you by any means, but I do want to inform you of the strong possibility that is out there that has every U.S. military official gravely concerned right now. We'll be back in a moment. Well, next hour, we'll take a walk on the supernatural side, but I got to tell you, nothing scarier than what we're talking about right now, the possibility of an electromagnetic pulse attack. And we'll be back with Michael Maloof and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're back with Michael Maloof as we talk about his work on Nation Forsaken and EMP attack. You pointed out that we as a nation, Michael, could be brought down to our knees if anybody launched a nuke that exploded above us. Explain how an EMP would work.
Well, the EMP would be can be from either a high altitude nuclear explosion from a man-made cause or from the or from a solar flare, a direct hit from a solar flare.
That's right.
It gives off it's a high energy electromagnetic energy of such as gamma rays and microwaves. These are different forms of electromagnetic energy, and they can be so powerful and so supercharged that they can absolutely devastate any electronics, unprotected electronics, including especially our grid system. And some of these solar flares that are whipping off the sun now can be as about 7 to 10 times as large as the Earth itself. And if one of them were to hit us directly, it would tremendously affect this country, especially because of our high dependency on our technology-based society. Our critical infrastructures would be devastated by that. And there's been instances where in the past where we've been affected by solar flares, but if we had a direct hit, given the fact that the sun's going through its most intense period, mm-hmm. 11-year cycle, then we have a real problem. From a nuclear standpoint, it would be you just need about a megaton or even less at a high altitude that could affect our grid system over a wide geographical area as well.
And how long would it take us to get that grid back up and running, Michael? I've heard months to maybe even years.
That's correct. NASA said from a solar flare, it would take anywhere from 4 to 10 years. It would cost $2 trillion in the first year, affect 160 million lives.
Jeez.
By effect, they mean death and starvation.
Now, motivation, of course. I mean, we're concerned about Iran building its nukes. That seems to be pushed by the wayside. Mm-hmm. I mean, this seems to be an ominous, real threat, don't you think?
Well, with North Korea especially, because they've actually tested three of them now, and the last test appears to have been quite successful. The assessment is that the last test was to test for miniaturization, which means that to fit it onto a missile. And the fact that Kim Jong-un fired a missile back in December, a three-stager, and which was assessed to be able to reach the West Coast, by the way. But it also orbited a package. That I found to be very, very disturbing, because that package could be a nuclear warhead. And combined with the most recent test, when you combine the two, then you have the potential for orbiting a nuclear weapon and then deorbiting it upon command anywhere across the United States and then exploding at a high altitude. Now, the thing that we're watching for right now is, what is he doing with his space launch vehicles, which are actually located, the long-range missiles are located on the west side of North Korea. I've seen a report now that there's actually been missile activity underway at one of those facilities, as opposed to the eastern side or along the demilitarized zone.
Why isn't the president saying anything about one, an EMP attack, and two, North Korea? I mean, where's the statement here?
Well, he always leads from behind, as we know. So he's had Hagel out there, the defense secretary, saying he's very concerned about the potential for the use of nuclear weapons, and knowing that the North Koreans have them. I cannot explain why he's not out there I think he's trying to keep a low profile in this thing, probably trying to work more behind the scenes with the Chinese especially, and try to defuse this thing. He does have Kerry out there, and Kerry, of course, made pronouncements that they were going to go ahead and defend South Korea, which is natural. And this thing with the most recent joint military exercise is probably what really
set him off.
Really tripped him up.
Now, should we have done that? Honestly, I mean, you know, when you do exercises like that, where you bring in your B-2 stealth bombers and you do, you know, you shake hands with the South Koreans and you show your might. We kind of provoked him a little bit, didn't we?
Well, he's used it as an excuse to say that the U.S. has intentions of having a nuclear war on North Korea, and that simply because you have a B-2 bomber, which is nuclear capable, flying all the way from the United States, and dropping inert bombs and on South Korea. He interpreted that to be a clear example of the intention of the United States to commit a nuclear war on North Korea. And it's gonna set him off. They get set off. The Koreans get set off every year whenever there's this annual joint
exercise. Right. But this has been the most vocal they've ever been.
Yes. Oh yes, this is beyond the pale. And right after he had his nuclear test, it was then that the leader came out and said that he was going to launch a preemptive nuclear strike on the United States. That told me that his last nuclear test was successful. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been so bravado about it. So I think we have to watch what he's going to be doing. The other thing, too, is that they have 8 to 12 nuclear weapons in storage that are stockpiled.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, he also has a uranium enrichment program underway that will allow him to develop fuel for nuclear weapons.
And they're launch ready right now with some of these missiles, aren't they?
Yes, they are. That's why we're watching. But those are short to medium range. They'll probably be the types that would have high explosives aimed at South Korea. The one that I would really be concerned about is on that west coast. That would be the three-stage intercontinental ballistic missile that would be capable of carrying a nuclear warhead. And up until now, our assessment was he didn't have that capability to. And given the bravado that he's talking right now, it makes you wonder, maybe they had some technological breakthroughs.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's take some calls. April in Hawaii, of course, an area that could be targeted by North Korea. April, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I've been listening to your program for years and years and years.
Well, thank you, April.
You know, we live here in Hawaii, and there's a lot of us that feel a little vulnerable.
Oh, sure.
Situation. And we hear the news, like last night I listened to your news report, and I was wondering, didn't they recently launch a satellite into the space too long ago?
They had what they called their space launch vehicle, which Michael was mentioning, that carried some kind of payload that we think could have been a test. I don't think it had a nuke on it, but Michael, it could have been the same weight in size, don't you think?
Yes, it could have been. It could have, and it was a satellite. And the fact that they were able to do that was what was disturbing to me. The fact that he is able then to put a satellite into orbit, which could also mean that he, on command, could have a deorbiting, and it could be a nuclear device in the future.
Now, here's the big question, of course. I mean, I remember during the Cold War where, you know, it was the United States against the Soviet Union. Kennedy got the missiles out of Cuba. He didn't want them in our backyard. And, you know, at threat of a nuclear war with the Soviets, both sides agreed, we're going to take this down and everybody backs off. Okay? Where is that kind of negotiation today? I don't see that.
Well, with North Korea, I think it's almost impossible. It's something that the United States is trying to work through the through the Chinese and through the Russians.
I'm appalled that the United Nations isn't doing much other than sanctions. Why aren't they involved with the Russians and the Chinese and simply say, look, you got to shut this guy down?
Well, that's been one of the suggestions, is rather than try to placate him and offer him further concessions and enhance the sanctions and cut off his financial resources, his sources of revenue, and to and maybe even put in a blockade, an economic blockade. That's something the Chinese probably would balk at, because they're already footing the bill and doing a lot to feed a lot of the millions of North Koreans. That's really worrisome to them, is the potential for a refugee problem should this thing break out.
Are we going to wake up one morning, Michael, and find out something stupid has happened?
Probably, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, I think so. I think that this is really getting to be a slippery slope, and once these things start, it's so much easier to start a war than it is to finish one.
What do you think his first target would be? South Korea?
Oh, yeah. I think that's going to be his primary, if he did anything. Now that they could be talking brinksmanship, and then exercise hopefully is over and things calm down. But it's in the interim that there could be something that could absolutely trigger this thing. For example, the Kaesong industrial complex. They're not letting some of the South Korean workers it's a joint thing between North and South. About 123 South Korean companies are there, and they make products.
Right, and heavily financed by South Korea.
That's right, and they have about 50,000 North Korean workers, but they also have South Korean workers that come in. Apparently, they're not allowing any more of the South Korean workers in, but they're not also allowing some of the South Korean workers who were there to leave.
Oh, boy.
So now we have the
hostages.
South Korean defense minister saying if need be, they'll undertake military action to undertake a hostage rescue. It's that kind of stuff that could absolutely set this thing off.
Jordan in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to the program, Jordan. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing, George?
Good. Thank you.
Just to give you kind of a little background on me, is I was a soldier in Korea from February of 2010 to March of 2011.
Okay. Thanks for serving, by the way.
While I was stationed at Camp Casey. It was pretty big base for us military people. And when in November, when we got attacked by North Korea on YPDO, everything kind of went really crazy for us. And it's pretty interesting, when you look at all this escalating nonsense that's been going around. A lot of my old friends, they say, they always do this. But this time, there's just a little different feel to this. I spent a lot of my days in November under high security and, preparing for a possible attack from North Korea. And I don't think nukes will ever come down for America for an option, just because America, we all know we're going to win the war. I mean, whether they use nukes on us or not, it's nothing for us to waste perfect land and perfect, opportunity to, grow more resources and, keep growing the American machine. I kind of take nukes out of it. I don't for that kind of people. Now I don't put it past them to use, chemical and biological weapons. Mm-hmm. I really think and, feel that they're more inclined to use something like that instead of nukes.
Are our men and women, our soldiers in South Korea, Jordan, are they ready for some kind of attack?
Oh yeah. I watched that one movie that just came out, where North Korea comes and attacks us, Red Dawn.
Yeah.
And you see, I think it's Channing Tatum or whatever, he goes and fights a North Korean. I'd be scared. I would be so scared by a North Korean in like hand-to-hand combat. I don't care. I'm at a distance with him. But, those people, they've been trained since they could walk, that they got to fight us. The propaganda there is crazy and outlandish against us. And, we go to school, we learn, economics, we learn math, we learn history. they learn how to kill someone.
Yeah, they learn hate. They learn hate. Okay, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate that from a soldier who was in Korea a few years ago. Gee, Michael, just, I don't know. When does it go away?
It's not going to go away. It's going to continue on, and I think that this is going to be a recurring problem. We're going to have this problem for as long as we have a North Korea. And I know the Chinese are very uncomfortable about it. I mean, it's not like 1950. I know that they have a commitment now to come to the defense of the North Koreans, and I know they don't want a war. That's not in their interest right now. And as the gentleman Jordan pointed out, these people could just swarm on over that border in no time flat.
Oh, no question. Let me ask you this, though. What would Vladimir Putin do if the North Koreans threatened Russia exactly the way they're threatening us? I bet there would have been preemptive strikes already.
Yeah, he probably would have taken a preemptive strike. And in fact, the South Koreans tonight are basically saying they would undertake a preemptive strike if they felt an imminent threat. So, again, anything can set this thing off at this point.
If we did a preemptive strike, would it be such that it would be devastating just to shut North Korea down permanently?
Probably would not. We'd probably hit the areas where they have the missiles and the artillery.
One could get through on their end.
Oh, sure. You're not going to hit them all. You're not going to be able to take them all. It would be... A nuclear attack on North Korea just would not be feasible.
Would Israel attack simultaneously Iran?
Well, this is an interesting diversion, isn't it? I mean, you see the North Koreans and the Iranians somehow playing the world politics off with one another. All of a sudden, the interest is no longer focused on Iran. So
Or Syria.
So the interest And, of course, the North Koreans helped the Iranians for years with their missile development and perhaps some of their nuclear development as well. You cannot exclude the possibility that there would be something like that, just to divert attention away, given the fact that the U.S. actually has troops stationed there, and that would probably be our greater priority at the moment.
We're with Michael Maloof, author of A Nation Forsaken. He also writes for WorldNet Daily. You know, Michael, maybe one day, and rightfully so, you'll be called an American hero because you're one of the few people, William Forstchen, of course, also, who has been talking about the possibility of an EMP attack, whether it's from a solar flare or from a nuke. But nobody else is talking about it.
No, well, that's. I think it's still not in their psyche. Everyone's still thinking conventionally, but some of us are very, very concerned about this prospect. And in fact, one of the subjects of my articles, most recent articles, reflected on how the intelligence community, some folks in the intelligence community, have briefed very high level types on this prospect of an EMP. So there is some concern in the USG.
All right, Michael, let's stay in touch. I have a feeling you may be back on sooner than later. Michael Maloof, his book, A Nation Forsaken. Look, you know, this is a subject we have been pounding away at for years here on Coast to Coast, and it's kind of frightening to see it possibly unraveling right before our eyes. Let's take a break from this, though, and come back in a moment and talk a little bit about the supernatural side. So let's take a little breather. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.